The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the first episode of True Crime and Cocktails Unsolved Mysteries Edition. I am Lauren Ash, and I could not be more excited about this podcast. Now, what you're about to hear is the pilot episode of the show, so it was recorded before we had an official title. You may hear it called some different things in this episode, no big deal. The other thing you need to know is that my amazing co-host Christy often has visuals in each episode, so you can always check out our Instagram page at True Crime and Cocktails, where we post anything visual mentioned in the episode for you to cross-reference. Photos, maps, video clips, it's all going to be there. It's like your own personal copy of our case file. You can also view the full unedited Zoom episodes on our website, truecrimeandcocktails.com, if you like. We do film at night in our pajamas, so just be prepared for that. But enough preamble. Pour yourself a drink, put on your PJs, and join us for this true crime slumber party. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Unsolved Mysteries with Lauren and Christy, the show where we talk about Netflix's new Unsolved Mysteries in a deep dive manner. As always, I am your host, Lauren Ash. I am joined, of course, by my sister, Christy Oxborough. Christy, how you feeling?
I'm really good. I'm a mess about kids in school, but
of course.
But for the most part, I'm really good. I'm deep diving. Like, just swimming through the lives of these strangers. And it turns out I may have missed a calling because I live for it.
Listen, we're all learning about ourselves during this quarantine pandemic, yeah. And I think that that's a great thing.
Yeah, I can't make any kind of bread, but I can find your court case in No Name, Georgia. And find out that you were not great, you know? Like, I can find these things, and I find that I'm coming alive, you know? I feel it
yeah. So much. Now, listen, what's the deal with this show? I'm going to tell you what the deal with this show is. The deal is that Christy came on an episode of my podcast, Giving It Up for Less. We talked about one of the episodes of Unsolved Mysteries. Our intention was to talk about multiple episodes, but there was so much information because Christy brought so much amazing research to the table that we realized, oh my gosh, we may have to do more of these. And then you, the listeners, had this huge outpouring on social media. We had countless people messaging saying, we need to see more. This is the duo we've been waiting for. And listen, we've been saying this for our entire lives. So it's nice that now we're being acknowledged as a duo.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But so we thought, you know, let's do this for a little bit. People seem to be interested in it. We have people who had never even seen the new Unsolved Mysteries who are like, I'm going to watch now because of listening to this podcast. So we're very excited about it. I think it's a whole lot of fun. You've become alive. I've come alive. I think we're learning. We're growing. And the people are getting an opportunity to pay attention.
That feels right.
Now, it does feel right. Now, you know, a few bits of business, again, that people need to know. It's dark. if you're watching this video, because it's nighttime. We've decided that we record these at night. We drink alcohol and we wear our matching pajamas, because as children, we were often dressed in matching clothing, and we've decided to, you know, own it and kind of take it back. And so when we get together, sometimes, you know, we'll buy, for example, these matching nightshirts.
Yeah.
And it's like an homage to our childhood.
You know, back when people found us too irritating to be in the same room. Look at us now.
You know what? There's a few choice people I'd like to just send a tape recording to and say, just listen to this. Yeah. Okay.
They probably can't.
They probably can't. Yeah, they couldn't stand it. But, you know, we come about this honestly. A lot of people, we were thinking back, we were reminiscing off the air about, you know, our love of true crime, our shared love of true crime. And it reminded us of when we were children. And we were what, like 7 and 8? I feel like I was 7.
Could have been. I want to say, and I'm going to city name drop here because this is how I moved around a lot. So this is how I remember how old I was at certain times. I was living in Yorkton at the time, so I was there between like 7 and 10-ish. So yeah, probably about 7. I was probably about 7 or 8.
Yeah, I think that's right. So yes, for the people also confused, we're cousins by blood. We're sisters by choice. Yeah. We identify as sisters, so that's where that's coming from. But I did go to visit at Yorkton.
Yeah,
I went to visit for the summer. And not the whole summer, but for a chunk of the summer. And we found a stray kitten. We found a stray kitten. Yep. Well, let me already walk this back for a second. We found a kitten outside. It could have belonged to somebody. We don't know.
Yeah.
But we had recently watched Alvin and the Chipmunks. And in Alvin and the Chipmunks, there was this character. They had gotten a kitten named Cookie Chomper the Third. Yeah. Correct?
Yes. Yes, they did.
And so we decided that this kitten was named Cookie Chomper the Third, and we had got called in. Again, it was endless summer, so we'd go outside and play for hours. You get called back in to have lunch. You go back outside. But when we went back outside, the kitten was nowhere to be found. So old Christy and Lauren decide we're going to take ownership of this kitten. So we got our paper, we got our crayons, and we made these missing signs. Missing Cookie Chomper the Third. But of course, we didn't have photos because it wasn't our cat.
Yeah.
And we drew pictures of the kitten, and then we put your home phone number on these posters and put them up all over the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And somehow we got ratted out. I think your brother may have ratted us out.
Oh, that checks. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. We got a firm talking to that we couldn't just claim that this cat was ours and we needed to go take these signs down. But there's a couple things I think about this. One, ingenuity.
Absolutely.
Smart. Creative.
Yeah.
Very creative. And already interested in committing crimes. Now we've turned the tables as adults and realized, you know, we don't want to commit the crimes. We just want to talk about them.
Absolutely. And I mean, let's face it. If a cat walked out in either of our houses, like just if we walk outside and there's a kitten there.
Yep.
It's got a new home. And that's how we both feel.
Get in the house.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. So I feel like we have not strayed far, but.
Don't pardon the pun.
Right. Well, I set it up, you knock it down.
It's what we do.
Yeah.
It's what we do.
Yeah.
I lob you the softball, you hit it out of the park. It feels right.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we've come about it honestly. We're here. You're having a slumber party with us. So, you know, pour your cocktail. And get ready to deep dive with us into the next in our series of Unsolved Mysteries episodes, which is 13 Minutes. Now, 13 Minutes, I think, was my favorite of the new episodes. Oh. Was it yours?
Oh, see, I had a really tough time deciding. I mean, that first one really grabs you with the guy jumping off the roof. And then this one, I mean, the husband alone was enough to be insane to me. I think the no ride home probably got me the most, because
sure.
I just was drawn to Alonzo, and I know that's problematic, but
I don't know. Yeah. Is it problematic to find a dead person attractive? I don't think it is. I think it's,
I mean,
you know, it's honest.
To be fair, I technically have only seen photos of him while he was alive.
Excuse me. I should also say, yeah. I mean, I'm also attracted to James Dean, for example.
Yes.
Is that problematic?
No.
And he's never been alive in our lifetimes.
Really? Yeah, that makes sense.
James Dean? Yeah.
I have no idea.
How old? I mean, James Dean, youthful forever, a young man for life.
Yeah, no, that. Look, that's not something I researched for this. So
and
I
listen, I know
you.
Yeah. I know you've done a ton of research. Show the people who are watching. Show them the folder.
I mean,
now,
well,
this is about this case alone.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's.
It's 2 inches thick.
It's a lot. It's a lot. I mean.
Talk to me about your workspace.
Well, I mean, usually my husband works at home during this nonsense. He has a desk in our room that he takes over because you can close the door and kids and animals don't bother you. I don't have that luxury. So I just wheel a comfier chair up to our dining table and just like spread everything out. And when the kids are bugging me about something, I'm like, do you want more game time? Because we used to have a set amount of hours we'd let them play.
Sure.
But that's gone out the window, obviously.
I think it has for most
families. Yeah, but especially now where I'm just like, mommy's got a case. You need to go. And so for while we record, I'm doing my best. I've taken over the desk from the bedroom.
Right.
I worried the first time I had a lot of paper shuffling around. So I've now just taped all my paper around the wall. So I feel like a little bit like a crazy person. A little Drew Barrymore in Mad Love, you know, if I may go back and reference that.
You absolutely may. What a reference.
With like the magazines and she's using toothpaste to hang them up. I don't know.
Pictures of the eyes.
Yeah, I don't know why that came to me. But that's very how it feels right now. And then.
Well, because you're living in some Mad Love.
Yeah.
That's what's happening currently.
Absolutely. I mean, I needed extra space. So I've got a drawer pulled out with a cutting board so I could have a higher shelf, like extra desk space so that I can have all my files that I need to read because that file is my main file. I've now,
of course.
I went and condensed it into smaller files, just more easily available to look at the info. And then I've also got the photos that I printed out in case we reference those for some reason.
What I like is that you're so prepared for anything. And some would say, hey, why don't you guys sit down and beat out exactly what you're going to talk about so you can have all those things ready. And that's just not how this show rolls. I think we just got to get into it because I'm so excited to hear. Because there's some things that you've shared with me and there's some things that are surprises to me. And that's what really, this is like I'm getting a life experience here. I feel like I'm in an escape room. I'm in my own escape room.
It just, this case just keeps giving. Like it's just, there's, I have a paper that specifically is just called Lingering Questions. because there's so many things that I'm like, okay. But what about this? And so my dream is that there are police in Georgia, or specifically maybe the GBI, I believe they are, who are listening to this with a little notepad, ready to see what I bring to the table. And if there's something that they write down and I give them their Oprah aha moment, that's great.
Look, some would say that branches of the FBI are listening to everything we do all the time. So I feel like, you know, hopefully somebody's like, you know, Clarence, I've got something for you. I don't know.
Well, then, like, Clarence. Let's just say I did get all this information legally.
Yeah. Yes. Let's make that very clear. We've broken no laws. We are not cookie chompering this podcast, okay?
Absolutely not. No. I mean.
We learned our lessons, damn it. Okay, so for people who aren't familiar with this episode, very quickly, 13 Minutes is a story about the very tragic killing of Patrice Endress. Am I saying that right?
I believe so. I've heard multiple people say it, and so, you know, just what an idiot.
Pretend like you don't know. I'm coming to you because I know you know the answers to these things.
I have to appear humble. It's my brand.
This Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know that in this duo you were the humble one.
Oh, I think that's pretty obvious.
Oh, my favorite was when I took her to Disneyland for her birthday one year, and we went for 3 days, and, like, on her birthday, she got a pin that said it was her birthday, and then the next day, she's like, I think I might wear the pin again, and I was like, yeah, do it, like, nobody knows, nobody's gonna card you, and then the third day, she doesn't put the birthday pin on, and I said, oh, you weren't gonna put the pin on it, and she goes, today I just want to feel like a normal person.
Look.
When you go to Disneyland and people, the workers see that it's your birthday, they all wish you a happy birthday. And you would maybe, you know, you'd had your fill of the attention, which is what I liked.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, let's be fair. Let's talk about how that happens. You're walking around. Normally, you see the characters and they'll, like, wave. But obviously, they don't make eye contact at you. But they tend to wave at, like, the children. They don't tend to wave at the adults. They're not ignoring the adults, but they're also, like, their focus is the children.
Right.
But when you got that pin, it's like you're the queen. And they are just like, they're like finger gun and like high fives. And they're just back when you could high five.
Yeah.
And just, well, I guess they wear gloves, so it's okay either way, but not the point. But yeah, they're just always like, they just want to make sure that you feel really special. And so, well done, Disney. I did. And then just wanted to be me.
Sometimes the queen takes off her crown. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. You gotta take off your crown to take a bath, right?
Yeah.
I don't understand that metaphor I just made. Anyway, okay. So Patrice Andrus, a very tragic, obviously, tale. She was a hairdresser. She was a mother. She was a very beloved member of the community in the town that she was living in, right? And they kind of talk about that in the episode of the show, that everybody loved Patrice, that she was super bubbly and outgoing, and people loved talking to her, and people would go to her hair salon just to, like, hang out or chat or whatever.
Yeah.
And she was a very beloved character in this community from the way they were painting it in the episode of the show.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, and the book that... One of the books that I read for this week's homework, it was talking to her sister who was in the episode, and
right.
She was just saying how everybody loved her, and it was, she was always smiling, always happy, and there wasn't anybody that seemed to have anything negative to say about her. I mean, obviously,
yeah.
I did not interview people myself.
Of course, of course, of course.
I've thought about it. But I also felt it might get uncomfortable. Like, how do you start that Facebook message, you know? I mean,
yeah.
I had to dial it back for the sake of my sanity because I'm like, what
sure.
would I say? Like, my God. But I was just, I'm just
My name
curious.
Is Christy Oxborough from the hit podcast Unsolved Mysteries with Lauren and Christy. That might be your opener.
Well, and here's my resume. At the top, you'll see Cookie Chomper the Third. Case solved. Yeah.
Case solved. We were degenerates.
Yeah.
Yes. So Patrice was very loved. And one day she went to work. She had a client. She got a phone call. The person who made that phone call was canceling an appointment. And they noted that she was very short. She wasn't herself. She seemed almost rude on the phone. And then 13 minutes later, there was another phone call that was never answered. And it is believed that at some point in those 13 minutes is when she was taken or killed or kidnapped and killed later. But there's obviously huge, this is a huge mystery. And we'll obviously get to the reasons why and the different people involved and all those kinds of things. But the kind of basics that you need to know for us to go forward is she was remarried to, or I don't even know, she wasn't married to her son's father, right?
They were never wed. I never found a marriage license.
And I know you looked.
Yeah.
So she was married to a man named Rob Andrus, and she had a son whose name was Pistol. Now, again, this was a nickname that was not his given name, and Christy did confirm that for me, which
I
appreciate.
I did.
But basically, the big kind of details you need to know are what I just told you, and she had this husband named Rob, who Pistol says for the first year of their relationship, he was great, and then he totally changed. He became mean, especially to Pistol. And in the show, Rob was very openly making terrible comments about Pistol, who was a teenage boy, who was a young boy for at the beginning of their relationship, saying he just hated him, he didn't like him, all of these things. And there was other people, like I believe Patrice's sister also commented that there was some tension between Patrice and Rob, you know, closer to when she went missing and then, of course, was found later dead. She was missing for, I think, was it 600 days before her body was found?
It was, yeah. December 2005, they found her.
Right. Yeah. So there's, again, there's lots for us to dig into. I think we'll kind of fill in the blanks again for people who aren't familiar as we go. But those are kind of the broad strokes. And I know that you've got lots of info for me. So the first thing, of course, is the witnesses. So there were people, there was two separate witnesses. You can jump in and correct me if I'm saying anything incorrect. Two separate witnesses. Oh, already she's jumping in. Okay, great. I hand over the conch. I hand over the conch.
I love that you're like, interrupt me, and then there's still that, you know, Canadian soul that was like, oh, no, she's fine. I mean, yes, the show showed two witnesses. What we don't know is there was a third witness.
What?
Yes. So we had the first witness. I'm just checking my notes that I've, you know, taped in my weird space. So the first witness, which I had to look on Google Map to try and figure out which direction she was going. She was driving east.
past the salon.
She sees Patrice's car, which is normally parked to the side, parked in the front, like parallel to the salon. She sees a blue car parked kind of nose to nose with hers. And she sees two women, hands on each other, like maybe one had fallen and one was helping one up or something. And the salon door was open. And then she kept going. That right away, I'm like, why'd you keep going? You know, like that was my thing, is like, if you knew Patrice, and you were like, what's going on there? What made you keep going? But maybe she had things to do, but this isn't on her, is what I'm saying. This isn't
her.
And then the police had a second witness who was driving west past the salon. He sees Patrice's car parked parallel. He sees a blue car. And then he sees a woman and a man. And that was about it. And I mean, I think he saw from behind. So, I mean, really, could go either way. You never know.
Right.
But they didn't mention on the show there was a third witness named Michelle Grant. She said she was driving past the salon. The problem is I haven't found a good time, like I haven't found a specific time where it says she gave this witness statement. But I did find she said she was driving past. She saw a fairly late model white Chevy van. She saw it was nose to nose with Patrice's car. She saw a white male in his mid-30s, brown hair, brown eyes, which how can she know his eye color from a car? Come on, that's
I don't think that's bullshit.
But okay, fine. Yeah. Medium height, medium weight, which also feels very like, oh yeah. Like she just went, oh, medium, I guess. Dark sweatshirt, sweatpants, camouflage hat. Mustache, and she saw this, and the cops were like, this is great. She worked with a sketch artist. They made a sketch of the man who I have.
Of course you do.
So they have this guy.
Right.
That they're like, this is the guy. And so they posted his picture throughout most of like northern Georgia, just like hardcore trying to find this guy, try to find the van. All of that.
Right.
And so they put all of their search efforts into finding this guy, finding this van, figuring this out. And then the police got a tip that she was lying. So they confronted her and she admitted she in fact was lying. She got charged with issuing a false statement. Which according to Georgian law, you can serve like 5 years in prison for that. From what I can understand, based on her court records, which I obtained legally, she got 1,000 hours of community service and 5 years probation.
Whoa.
But she could have totally done jail time. So the cops and apparently the media at the time were just like, she did it for attention. And it's like, okay, sure. There are people who are like a certain level of crazy and like, I want to get attention. And right. they'll do anything, but risk jail time? You know?
Yeah, that feels extreme. Now, this is, it's wild to me that Netflix, the episode didn't include any of this, because this feels like such a huge part of that story, that there was a total red herring that was introduced
yeah.
that led the police down the wrong path. Like, that feels like it should have been included.
Well, agreed. I think maybe they just, I think they ran out of time. Maybe they were, maybe they didn't want to give us something that turned around and was false.
Right. I guess if you were trying to cut for time, sure. But that just feels like something to not, to at least, even if you couldn't dwell on it, to at least mention. Because it feels to me like, and to your point, it does seem like risking jail time by lying about something like this feels like you would have a stake in the situation. Like, so she's just doing this for attention? Maybe. But it also feels like if other witnesses saw a woman with Patrice in her last, right?
Absolutely.
Maybe she was covering for herself. Maybe she was actually involved in this crime.
Oh, the second I found out about her, I was like, so wait. So she claims she sees something and then is like, oh, yeah, no, I didn't. And has to go through like court proceedings. She could have done jail time. It's like, you only risk that if you're trying to purposely make the cops look a different way.
Right.
Is how it seems to me.
Because so it feels like she could either be covering for A, somebody she knows who's involved, or B, herself.
Yeah, absolutely. I have been pouring into her past. I've been trying because I desperately believed that somewhere I would find somebody connected to her and this woman, and there would be a connection between the two. I've looked. I mean, I genuinely thought that I was going to go through these like stacks and stacks of paper. And at one point I was going to find a person they had in common, and I was going to go full like Jeff Daniels in Speed and like, we got our scumbag. You know? I really believed that was going to happen.
Yeah, of course.
And look, I can't beat myself up for this. The cops have had this for 16 years and they haven't solved it. What could I do in 2 weeks? But
that being said,
I didn't stop trying. I mean, my God.
And I think that it's the tenacity that people are really responding to, and I'm responding to. Now, there is also something, though, because this you said that the police were focusing on this sketch that she had done with a sketch artist and stuff like that. Did that lead them to any suspects that looked like that sketch?
Well, the joke is it didn't, but there was a serial killer in the area. They didn't know it because of, interdepartmental problems, we'll say. So this guy, Jeremy Jones, he was at, he's been like, I mean, currently he is on death row in Alabama, so he is caught.
Sure.
But they figure that he's responsible for deaths between like 1992 up to 2004.
Whoa.
And I think he had like a rape charge, and then he like cut and run, changed his name. He got somebody else's identity, changed his name. And then, so the next time he got arrested for something, which probably was a rape charge because he's a type, then the police looked at it and they were just like, oh, it's a different guy. That's cool. So they didn't piece together that he wasn't the guy he was supposed to be. And
they fell for the fake identity.
They absolutely did.
Wow.
The true joke is the identity he took was a guy who was already in prison. So you would think somehow that would figure out, but apparently this guy was in prison in Missouri, so maybe Georgia didn't know Georgia as though she's a person.
Sure.
I don't know. But this guy, I mean, he... Good God, he did horrific things. He he ended up getting caught because he was just a full dummy. I mean, at the time that Patrice went missing in March, well, she went missing in April of 2004, but in March 2004, he was living in Douglasville with a girlfriend who I've also researched, she wasn't as easy to find.
Right.
But she was there. They were living in Douglasville, which was not very far from where Patrice was at the time. And then, like, a few months later, he ends up in prison in, like, June. He spent a week in county jail because they arrested him for something smaller, not realizing who they had. And then he goes over to Alabama. He horrifically kills this poor woman who he ends up getting caught and charged for.
Right.
And when they catch him, he was like, well, while I'm here, and then just confesses to 13 murders across like 6 different states. One of which,
whoa,
he confessed to Patrice's murder. He's like, I was bored. I was driving around. I got lost. Saw the salon, went in for directions. No man is going to stop and be like, I genuinely need directions.
Yeah,
let's go to that hair salon to look for directions. It's like, if they're going to ask, maybe a gas station, maybe not a hair salon. Yeah. So it's like, no. I don't know about that. So he claims she was alone. She was eating lunch. She was his type, as he says, which all of the victims that they have officially pinned on him, well, that sounds like he didn't actually do it. All of the ones they have proven that he has killed,
right,
are all the same, like, very bright, smiley brunette. So Patrice does fit that. So
sure.
Yeah. I guess his type. So sure. He says he took her, did unimaginable things to her, and then threw her body off some bridge like 60, 70 miles away. And then it was like, yeah, well, that's where she is. And the cops wanted to go search there. But at that time of year, when he confessed, the water level was rising so badly that they had to keep postponing searching that river. So that pushed everything back. The thing of it is, though, I took the guy's mugshot.
Yeah.
And I printed it on the other side of the sketch.
Are you going to do a dramatic reveal?
We've got the sketch, right?
She is.
We've got the sketch, and then we've got...
Whoa.
That guy. Now, come on. Like, a little bit, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like, I could see it.
So this is... That's so interesting. So he admitted to the crime, and then he later recanted, right? They talked about that on the show.
Yeah. They said that he's still a suspect because they haven't officially ruled him out. But yeah, he turned around and said he killed nobody. Like, he's never killed a person. But like, at one point,
he did.
At one point, they found him with like a girl's blood on him. And so it's like, so you obviously did kill this girl, and he's on death row for it and all of that. But he admitted.
But what's interesting to me is that he admitted to it, and then he recanted later, and yeah. I knew they said that in the show. But again, it's interesting to me that they've left out this detail of this false witness, because her sketch drawing, yeah, it looks exactly like this dude, which makes me wonder, does she know him? Was there a connection there?
This is the tough thing. I tried to really, like, look into him, and I've looked into him mostly through various, like, Murderpedia sites, which are a thing I'm learning.
Sure.
But of course, I'm gonna be old hat at it before you know it.
Of course.
There was a book that I read specifically that I downloaded. I paid for some ebook. I'm gonna specifically let people know I did pay for this book.
And I will reimburse you for that.
I would appreciate that.
Of course. Save your receipts.
Yeah, of course. I mean, this book, okay, look, I'm just gonna say it like it is. This book was a mess. I'm not an author.
Sure.
But this particular book, called Bloodlust, Killing Was His Pleasure, by Sheila Johnson.
The colon statement.
Right. Well, it specifically is following this Jeremy Jones, and it mentions Patrice in there multiple times. So... that was my whole thing, is I wanted to read what info she had on the case that hadn't been told before.
Right.
The problem is it jumps around a lot and it repeats itself a lot.
Oh, dear.
And it's just not what you would call well written. It's like it makes open mistakes four sentences apart. Like it contradicts itself, and then it's like, oh wait, but you just said wait, what? And it was a tough read. It was a tough read, but not for reasons you would think.
Of course.
I mean, at one point she said she exchanged letters with Jeremy Jones, the killer, because she wanted to see his side to be able to have like a neutral sort of perspective, I suppose.
Right.
And he was like, oh, you're writing about me. I want to see a rough draft before you publish it. She responds, quote, there's no such thing as a rough draft when I wrote. Well, it shows.
Maybe you should have done another pass, Lady Jane.
It was tough. There was a lot of info that she had. Right. She did mention this guy. She mentions that she's how I initially found out about Michelle being the third witness.
Right.
So she had some solid stuff in there, I guess, but just mixed in with a lot of, why'd I read that, you know?
I do know what you mean. I felt the same way after I've read, you know, Tommy Lee's autobiography. Why'd I read that? He wrote half of it as the voice of his own penis. Not a good use of my time. Okay, yes, but they did say that this Jeremy Jones in the show, I remember they said he is still a suspect because he had information about the details of the crime that have never been released to the public. I remember them saying that on the episode of the show. So
yeah,
he is still in the mix. It's very interesting to me. It's interesting to me to see that this woman drew basically exactly his face and then admitted to lying. Then the other question is, was she lying? Or did people get to her and be like, you're going to have to say you were lying to save so we don't kill you? Is that possible? Are the other witnesses the liars? I mean, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I tried to really do a good hard background check on him, but he doesn't come up nicely. You can't find them on your basic pages. And so I had to go on stuff like this book and various murder sites and whatever.
Right.
One thing, when he went in custody, they found out he had a storage unit. All that was in it were pictures of all these women who at first were unidentified. They've since identified all these women. They are all alive. But it's a very obvious, like, it was probably like future victims because they were all brunette, all very smiley, all that kind of thing. Some of them knew him personally. Wow. I feel like that would have shook me to my core, but that's not the point.
Yeah.
The other thing they found was a ring that belonged to a victim that he still to this day claims he didn't do anything to, but it's very obvious that he did.
Right.
But I just find that interesting that he took the ring. Because Patrice, when her body was found, they never found her wedding ring.
To this day.
Exactly. So my question is taking like a piece of jewelry, like is that a thing of his? So is this another like point to it is potentially him?
Great question. Great point.
Because I mean, my God, I have searched. I don't really want to admit it, but I've searched pawn shops in Georgia online looking for that quote. One-of-a-kind ring. I had a picture of it on my desktop, and I just went through various counties that they could have been, like, just a full nut job. But,
now, I do want to say, of course I never found it. You found, but you didn't find it, but, I mean, good Lord, you've done so much. Now, I did, like, one search, and I was not very good at it, and I was trying desperately to link Jeremy Jones to Rob Endress, who is, of course, Patrice's husband, and we're going to get to him in a minute. But I was like, maybe they did jail time together, because I did discover that Rob had gone to jail for a DUI, and I was like, oh my God, what if he met Jeremy Jones in prison, and they colluded on this murder together? So I'm in databases where I'm searching jail records in, like, a small town in Georgia, and it is those moments that you look at yourself and you go, what are we doing with our lives? We should be full-time detectives, is my point.
Absolutely.
And we've been talking a lot the past couple of weeks that it's like, if we could just get access to a police computer where we would have access to all this information, maybe we really could, you know, build an even stronger case.
That's all I need. I need just, like, 20 minutes. I want everybody who's owned a blue car, because the two people who saw a blue car were, as the guy on the show said, independent of each other.
Right.
So there had to have been a blue car there. So I want everybody in the state of Georgia who had a blue car of those types of make and model, I want to read through page after page. I want that list so
bad. You're looking for your scumbag!
Thank you for bringing that back.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, that is one of my favorite parts in that movie.
It is mine too, of course it is.
But I desperately wanted it. And that's what I feel like I needed to crack the case.
Of course.
I, of course, didn't have it. I didn't even have the proper, like, microfiche. I had to go on newspaper websites, which wasn't as much fun.
The statement, "I didn't have the proper microfiche," is amazing. Now, there very quickly, before we get to Rob, because there's a lot to talk about with him, there was another serial killer also that was referenced on the show. This is Gary Michael Hilton, is that correct?
Correct, yes.
And what's his deal?
Well, here's the thing. Everybody's like, oh, it could have been him. But I haven't found any info that he was in the area at the time. Am I defending a serial killer at this point? Apparently so.
You're defending the truth. You're defending the facts. You're defending the facts.
I'm defending Patrice. I'm giving her a voice.
Damn right.
God. Now I've put pressure on myself.
It is a large burden to carry. Yeah.
This Gary, which doesn't feel like a serial killer, but he is. So he was a vagrant. His big MO apparently was he liked to go to salons around lunchtime and ask for money.
Which seems so specific.
I didn't know what to do with that. But
specific.
It is what it is.
Wow.
So they liked that, but he didn't come into play until like 2008 because he killed a woman, Meredith Emerson, in 2008 and left her body in the same woods where Patrice was found.
Interesting.
So once they found her, then they were like, is he now this specific forest killer because he keeps putting bodies there? But I don't think he was in the area at the time. I get that he liked to go to salons and ask for money, but if he was some vagrant, I doubt that he was going to have a car. And that the police said that there was no, like, the shop looked perfectly fine. Like, she just walked out of there.
Right.
So I doubt, like, she would have made a bigger fuss, I think, if it was just some, like, random guy walking in trying to get her. And plus, there was only such a small window, because they said normally people are coming in and out of that place. People went there just to, like, hang out and talk for hours.
Right.
And so it's just that tiny little window. What are the odds he would have happened upon it unless he'd been casing the joint or something?
Right.
But I don't believe it was him. I believe he's done other horrific things.
Of course.
But I don't believe that was it.
I do see where the police were going, that it's like, it does feel like a huge coincidence that he has an MO of going into salons, and then also he killed somebody and dumped the body at the same place where Patrice had been found, her remains were found. It does feel like those are two huge coincidences.
Absolutely.
To be coincidences, but also, I think what we're learning about the layers of this insane case is that there's so much stuff that feels like it means something that maybe does and maybe doesn't, which is what's, you know, infuriating.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, really, their biggest thing is he left her body in the same place where Patrice was found. Well, Patrice was found in 2005. He killed this girl in 2008.
Oh, so it was after the fact. So that could have, like, been a copycat anyway that has nothing to do with anything.
I honestly think like he killed her while she was out for a hike.
Well, that's not a salon, is it?
Right? And so he basically killed her and then dumped her body in a place where it was convenient because she was hiking up in, like, I want to say mountains. Are there mountains in Georgia? I didn't do that research.
Oh, we're Canadian. We don't know that kind of detail about American geography.
Let's say hills. She was hiking in the hills.
Okay.
In and around this forest. And that's where he grabbed her and left her there.
Wow.
So I just feel like, yes, he's guilty, but not of this.
Yeah. It sounds like that's probably the case.
Yeah.
Okay, so other questions I have for you. There was in the show, there was a gentleman who had gotten his hair cut that morning, and then he left before she got the phone call that she answered, and then the other one. Now, my question is, who's that guy? How did he get, what was his alibi? Do you have any of this information? Did he drive a blue car? You know, these are the questions that I have.
I mean, it turns out maybe I don't need a police computer. I need like the DMV. So it could be easier.
Sure.
Easier to access. That was Paul Cantor.
Thank you. I love, again, none of this is planned. I love that I was just like, if I pull this out, will she have the answer? And the answer is, yes, she will. Yes, she will.
Well, because he was technically, he's as far as we know, the last person to see her alive.
Right. And that's usually,
I went looking into Paul's life. Yeah. I mean, I wanted to see if there was somebody, because he shows up at 11:10 and he says he left at 11:27. He's an older guy. Guy haircuts don't take that long anyway. Sure. He was probably a quick trim out, whatever. And the police said he received a phone call as he was leaving. They checked phone records, which would also be nice to get a hold of.
Absolutely.
He said it checks out. He did receive a call, whatever, so they think he's fine. I tried to find any sort of connection to him and Jeremy Jones, because I'm still convinced Jeremy Jones is part of it.
Right.
Because it's just so, like, she absolutely was his type. He was right there at the time. I just truly believe he was part of it. And to so quickly admit to it and then just be like, oh no, I didn't.
And this potential other woman that did describe him exactly, maybe he wasn't a witness that was seen there, but maybe she knew he had something to do with it, so she made up that story and described him. How else would she have the eye color?
I mean,
right?
I tried. I mean, it's just I couldn't find his background info to look into. I don't know if they
the old man.
Oh no, I've looked hard into the old man.
Excuse me.
So I meant Jeremy Jones.
Of course. My bad. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
Okay. Because, I mean, I used his name as well as the name he was using.
Right.
When he initially got caught. And I couldn't really find a lot of stuff. And I'm thinking it's specifically because of the fact that he's a well-known serial killer.
Right.
However, he did have a girlfriend at the time.
Right.
And so I've looked into her and I'm trying to see if I can find anybody that connects to her, because I assume then that automatically would connect them to Jeremy
I feel
Jones.
Like trying to find a connection between her and Michelle Grant, the false witness. There could be, I feel like that's a lead.
I tried.
And I wonder if, excusez-moi, I wonder if any police people are listening to this going, we know, Lauren, we've tried it. You know what I mean? But listen,
Feel like they're saying that about anything I've said.
And well, we've got to ask the questions. Why? Because again, if we don't, who will? Well, the answer is other concerned citizens. But not in the same way or the same level of research
of
that you've done. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. So do you think the old man who had his haircut that morning, you do believe he's telling the truth, that he had nothing to do with it? Because just because he got a phone call as he was leaving, I don't think that proves anything. What was his actual whereabouts during that time?
Well, that's the thing. I don't know about that. All I know is, I mean, he didn't, I mean, assuming that he went home, again, if I could just like 30 minutes with a police computer, just to like, I want to see phone records. I want to look at vehicles. I want to look like, if they need to give me a heads up if I get this time, so I can have like a list of things that I want to look at, so I don't waste a second of it, because I just want to get into it. He had no connection whatsoever to anybody in Patrice's life. I checked Patrice. I checked her son. Her son was 15 at the time.
Right.
A little Marky Mark, like, if I may. I don't know why I felt the need to go there. For the sake of fairness.
Yeah.
I looked into everybody.
And that's because you're a good detective.
everybody. I looked into Patrice, her son, her son's father, her husband's family, the old guy getting the haircut, or as I just called him, the last client to see her alive, very dramatically. Anybody who's ever shared an address with her, I checked into them. I checked into the false witness, Jeremy Jones' ex-girlfriend, because I hope they're not still together. I mean, you never know.
You never know. But if they are together, I want to send her a message, which is you can do better. Aim higher.
Oh,
you're deserving of love. All right. I think we got to talk about Rob Endress, because he is really the part of this episode that is the most compelling. And I know that you found a lot of information. He, of course, again, for people who haven't seen the episode, he does not come off in the episode like a traditionally normal human. And I say that in that there was things that he said that just kind of make you, like, a little alarm bells go off. And then he says some things that bigger alarm bells go off, and then even bigger alarm bells go off. So just very quickly, again, for some backstory, the day that she went missing, he had the locks changed either that day or by the next morning. So she was missing, and her son could not get back into the house. And he said, because, oh, well, there was a crime and I didn't know if they'd come for me or something. That felt weird.
Absolutely.
He talked about how their relationship was perfect, yet multiple other people said that they had massive problems, that Patrice wasn't happy. It seems very much like she maybe had gone to him and said she wanted a divorce, because Pistol, her son, did say she came to me a couple weeks before she went missing and said, what would you do if I ever went missing? And I was like, no, and listen, you can speak to this as a mother, but I feel like the only way a mother would say that to her child is if she was genuinely in fear. You don't just randomly go, hey, let's play a fun game. What would you do if mommy died? Like, I just don't feel like that's right. And she didn't seem the type. Yeah.
No, everything that I'd read about the two of them seemed that, like, that was... her child was her world.
Right.
And so, I mean, I've read a lot. Again, it goes back to that terrible book. I'm so sorry, Sheila. Where they talk to the sister, and the sister was like, Patrice never went on vacation with the two of them together. She either went on vacation with Rob or she went on vacation with Pistol. Never the two of them together, because they didn't get along.
Right.
Pistol was about 8 or 9 when they got married, and then they were married for the 8 years before she went missing.
Right.
But he is...
yeah. Well, again, and very quickly again, he does talk about, on the show, he does talk about that when they found her remains, he asked the funeral parlor to lay out her bones so he could see her one last time. And then he talks about going in, picking up her skull, kissing it, walking around with it. And then he made a comment about, like, that was the last time I saw her even close to being
intact.
Which is like, who would say that?
Somebody who's trying to pass a polygraph.
Thank you very much. And then exactly. And then the other thing that he alluded to was that after that, he got her ashes and he slept with them every night, quote, hugging it like it was a teddy bear. And then he made a comment about, like, well, I have her now, and that means everything's okay. So there was just, there. I think most viewers who watched the show definitely said he was creepy, there was something off about him, and that's why I know I'm excited to hear what you have to tell me about him.
Well, here's the thing. When Rob and Patrice met, he was, like, 50 years old.
And she was, what, 30?
She was a vibrant
30. Sure, not one of those nana 30s, you know what I mean?
No, well, I don't know why I pointed to me. I'm not 30. I'm beyond 30, but I still felt the need. That's why I'm nana, because I'm not 30.
Listen.
But yeah, so Rob, so my big thing through this whole thing, just forgive me, but fuck, what a creep. Like, everything he said was just...
Chilling, like chilling.
I am, again, I know I'm just kind of a one-trick pony here, but I would desperately like to watch the video that they shot that they didn't put in the episode. Like, I just want 5 minutes alone with that video.
You want the extra footage, you mean?
I absolutely do, because can you imagine what they didn't put in there? Like,
I mean,
they claim that they put him in such a way because they didn't want us to assume he was the killer. And it's like, no, I don't know if you did your job. But like, my big thing was, so he's 50 when they meet.
Right.
That's a lot of life to live before you know meet somebody. So I'm like, what kind of skeletons are in that closet? And let me tell you. So I did a search for this man.
Yeah.
I came across a book. Another book. I'm going to be honest. It also wasn't great. I didn't read the whole thing, though. I'll give him props. Because I didn't want to pay $15 for it. Because it's literally called My Life and Thoughts. Written by a man that is essentially nobody. I'm nobody. But nobody wants to read my book. You know what I mean?
Yet. Like, so, yet. But, well, my life is an internet sleuth. The Christy Oxborough story.
Look, I could make it happen. That's not the... I would edit it.
Of course.
I would have a rough draft.
I've seen your file folders. I'm very trustworthy that you would do a better job.
I would have multiple rough drafts.
Of course.
So I find this book.
Yeah.
It's a guy. He wrote it in 2011.
Okay.
He says he was married to a woman named Sue, and she had a brother, Rob Endress. So I thought,
okay,
now we're on, now the ball is rolling. Here we go.
Yeah.
But according to my notes, but is it the right Rob? So
you're asking the questions you should be asking. Absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
So he says he's about 5'11". Again, I can't find a height anywhere on him. Again, just a DMV computer, 10 minutes, and I'll get it. But it says he has reddish hair.
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, reddish hair in the episode.
Sure.
Right? So then it says that he met a girl from Allentown, Pennsylvania. I've looked into it. His ex-wife has connections to Allentown, Pennsylvania, and at one point had lived there. So I'm kind of believing it's him.
Right.
And then I was like, oh, well, we'll see. Maybe it is him. Maybe it's not. I kind of hoped it was. And then I hit pay dirt because they were like, well, here's a photo. And he's young, but I mean, it looks like him. And yes, I'm just going to preface this. It is black and white photo.
Sure.
I'm not made of ink. My budget, is black and black ink. But I mean, that
lift
could be.
It up a little. Lift
oh,
it up
sorry.
A little.
Sorry.
There it is. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
Come on.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
And, like, he's got the same nose, the same jaw, all of that. So I'm like, okay. So I'm already convinced that it's him.
Right.
So this guy is saying that Rob joined the army. He was in Special Forces, Green Beret.
Interesting.
He served his 3 years plus a 2-year extension. He was in special operations in Thailand, where he had orders to kill anyone he encountered. He understandably, quote, those experiences created some deep prejudices in Rob. So not just a full creep, but a racist.
Well, we're learning.
Yeah. So then he says he urged Rob to try college, but he dropped out shortly after because he felt like all the college kids were morons. Now, in the episode, he claims to have a degree in criminology.
Right. Yes.
And I get that this point that this guy's writing about is like the 70s. So it is more than possible. He went back to school.
Sure.
I have Googled the hell out of his name and college alumni and found nothing.
Right.
That doesn't mean it's not there. But I just don't believe that he has a degree, mainly because I think he's retired now, but
sure.
At the time of all of the stuff going on with Patrice, he was working as like at some plant in Conyers, Georgia.
Yeah.
As like a second shift supervisor. And so it's like, if you go and have the time and money to get a degree in criminology, why wouldn't you use it? And I fully understand that that's a pot kettle black situation because I have a degree and I am not doing a thing with it. In my defense, it's a Bachelor of Arts degree. So my father said I wouldn't use it, and I didn't.
So, but wouldn't you argue that you're using it right now? Come on.
Oh, my God. If you could just tell my dad that. You know,
I'll send him an email.
Well, you know what? I don't need his praise. I do. I really do.
Desperate for it. Yeah. I've been begging for it since I was a child.
I'm so glad you brought that back. We got to hit that on it. We got to hit that every time, right?
Absolutely, yes.
So, yeah, my big thing is, why say you have a degree if you possibly don't? It was just a weird, it feels like everything he said in that episode felt absolutely like, I just want to let you guys know that I'm smart and I know that you would suspect me. Because I think at one point he was like, I know you suspect the husband, you always do.
Right.
But he's like, but I just want to prove how it wasn't me.
Okay. Totally. Because his big thing was like, well, I have a receipt and I was getting gas at a gas station that was a far distance away and the timestamp is on the receipt and therefore I couldn't have been there when she went missing. Now, yeah. There's lots of theories about this. First of all, is there video of him there or is he just using the receipt? He could have sent anybody with his credit card in a car to a gas station at a certain time to get a receipt.
And
right?
How much gas? Like, is it did he literally have to fill up his whole tank or is it just like a fucking $5 little piddly.
Great point.
Like just a small top up to be like, this is my alibi. But also, Speaking of gas. So, I have a map.
Of course you do.
Yeah.
Of course you do.
So, well, before we get to the map, so the house. I had a whole other map because I thought they lived in a different area because they've never specifically said where they live.
Right.
So I had the area. So it looked like he went way out of his way for gas to go all the way to Woodstock where he claimed he got it. So looking into this, I found an address linked to Patrice at the time of her death in this Woodstock, the area where he claims he got gas.
Right.
So I Google mapped it. Because I do. And again, yeah, black and white. So up here.
Yes.
We've got the Google map version of the address, and below we have the episode, the house that they showed in the actual show, and
that's the same house.
The same house.
Yeah.
So now that I know where they live, I can look it into, I can put it into Google Map. So
right,
this is their house.
Okay.
Rob works way just not even close to being on the map.
How far away is that? Like an hour drive?
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, the real joke is all of these spots are all of the gas stations
in the
area.
Oh, my God.
Now, I want to know which one did he go to? Because there's two literally on his way going down to work.
Right.
But I'm thinking he went to one of these just to be a real dick and have an alibi.
Well, and the police said in the episode, they said that, you know, he's not the alibi doesn't fully get him off because the timing does not add up. Like he could have still had time to go and get gas, go and get her at work, essentially take her home, kill her. And then he could still get to work on time because he then clocked in at work, which is the other part of his alibi. But the whole point was there was a chunk of time between the time on the gas station receipt and the time he clocked in at work that it's like, well, all of that time is still not accounted for. So,
yeah, like I truly believe that there has to be some sort of way, like he could have easily either got gas himself or got somebody else to get it.
Right.
Get up to her where she works, which was about a 30-ish minute drive from where he was getting gas, which he could have got gas from any of those places. So I'm well aware that some of those didn't probably exist in 2004. But,
sure.
I mean, come on. I didn't have the time to look up the opening date of each of them, but
I would have. If you'd had another couple days, I know that would have been your first priority. I get it. So that is interesting. So you found this book. We're sure that it's him. He has
I'm
this Green Beret pass.
Yes.
Obviously then he's been, you know, he's seen a lot. He's gone through a lot. That can do something to a person. So that's a factor too. I mean, you know, What else do we have? So the house. You've learned a lot about the house, and I know that obviously our White Pages budget is through the roof at this point.
It's a godsend.
I know. It's very, just, very inclusive.
Just so much information that you need to know, that you need to know.
For our purposes, but well, yeah, I mean, it's a loose need.
Yeah, there's a lot of questionable things. Like, they list on there, they list addresses.
Right.
And they give you the time frame that they're at the address. However, a lot of them, it could very well be they just never told specific government people that they left that house. And so a lot of them, so much overlap, which is ridiculous. Like, right. At one point, Rob and his ex-wife and Patrice all had the same address from like 1997 to 2003.
Interesting.
So, and it was after Rob's divorce, because they got divorced because, you know, I went through those court proceedings.
Of course.
He got divorced in 95. And so him and Patrice would have got married probably around 97. So it's weird. I assume he had shitty credit, to be honest. I think he had shitty credit.
Well, he does have some judgments against him, doesn't he? Didn't he have judgments against him?
He didn't pay taxes for a while there.
Right.
He's currently, like, he's had multiple money issues. He's currently declared bankruptcy, which I almost feel bad about saying out loud.
Right.
But maybe if he was a nicer person, I wouldn't say it.
Well, he did treat Pistol pretty badly.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. The other thing, Patrice, they list her as that address. The house is shown, obviously, on the show, so I'm going all based on that address. However, during, like, a single month in, like, I want to say March or April, because I have it in my notes somewhere, Patrice was listed as an address in Conyers, which is where her husband worked. She was listed as having an apartment there. So then, but Rob wasn't listed on it. She was. So my question is, did they have an apartment there so he could crash and not have to come all the way back home?
Right.
So is this whole getting gas thing, did he really go that much out of his way? Either way, I still think if he did go to where he, any of the, most of those gas stations are out of his way. They're like a 10 mile
right
east when he did, he needed to be going southwest.
Right.
So it still was a weird, it was a weird choice. But right. That apartment, Patrice was in there, from an unknown start date until April of 2004. Then Rob has his name on it in September of 2008.
So who had it between 2004 and 2008?
Right? And then if he's going to get it, he specifically wanted her other apartment? Like, it was like an apartment that I doubt she would have lived in.
That's weird.
Because it's way far from where she worked.
Right.
Because she worked way northern of where they were living. It was like a half hour drive from where they lived for her to get to work. She wasn't going to double that.
No.
So it's just weird. There's a lot of stuff going on with addresses. But he is absolutely just, I mean, people online, hard majority are like, oh, he's creepy. He absolutely did this.
Right.
Oh, my God. But there is a small percentage, and I see you out there, who think we're too quick to judge.
Right.
They think he was portrayed weird on the show, to
he's
which
eccentric.
I say, you know what?
Right.
He was the one who said that stuff. I'm dying to know what else he said, but, you know.
I know.
There were people who looked at his body language. They said he often crosses his arms, which is indicating being defensive. He,
right.
At one point, extends his arms and interlocks his hands like he's trying to force himself to stay still so he doesn't give off any sort of body language or whatever. And when he makes statements, he closes his eyes and then opens them and then just like delivers them like he's delivering a script.
Interesting.
You know? So I think him and his criminology degree, I think he's about as degree as I am, and we both watched a lot of CSI. I think
right.
He knows what, like, the to do, not to do.
Right.
I'm totally convinced he's part of this. I don't know whether he took her or whether he had somebody do it for him, but like, I just, as a wife.
Yeah, I'm listening.
I just, if something, God forbid, happened to my husband.
Sure.
And the police were like, we found his remains. Would you like to see them? I would be like, no. I don't want to see his bones. No. I don't want to touch his bones. I think this is the weirdest thing I've ever heard. The fact that he was so comfortable, just like, I want to pick up her skull. I'm going to cradle it. I'm going to kiss it. It's like, that dude was only comfortable because he's touched them before. You know, like, level of comfort comes from someone who handles bones. You know, it's like, it's such a weird thing to say.
And the other thing, now listen, I noticed in the show he was wearing a wedding ring. Now, is that Patrice's wedding ring or is he remarried?
It is not. He has since the show, or not since the show, but he has since Patrice remarried.
Wow.
And good, because his credit is so bad, his wife had to buy the house. And that's fine. That's fine.
Listen, that's their business.
Absolutely. I just feel like, God, I don't know. This guy, also something else about him that they didn't mention on the episode, which this could be seen as kind of like, maybe I shouldn't bring it up, but this is what we're doing. With his first marriage, I say first marriage because I don't know for sure if he didn't have another one. The guy who wrote the book, who mentioned Rob being in Green Beret, he fell out of touch with Rob because this guy and his wife, who is supposedly Rob's sister, they got a divorce.
Okay.
And so in like the 70s, late 70s, so he hasn't seen Rob in decades. So the book, of course, does not mention Rob anytime recently, which is unfortunate. I looked. I was hoping for just like a nugget or something, but nothing.
Of course.
But one thing that they didn't mention on the show, which I was very surprised to find out, that in his marriage to this woman before Patrice, he had a son.
What?
So.
Okay, hold on a second.
Yeah. Now, I've also looked into this son. So the son is born in 1982.
Okay.
So in 95, when they divorced, he was 13 years old.
Okay.
So assuming that they, because I mean, I think Rob and Patrice were married in about 97.
Okay.
So if they were together for like a year or so before they got married, imagine your parents divorcing when you're like 13, 14 years old, and then your dad goes and marries somebody who has a 7-year-old son.
Ooh.
There's got to be some anger there, right? Not to mention, I mean, the son and Rob only ever share an address once, and it's the house him and his wife got in like 1986, and he just never removed his name from.
Right.
But otherwise, they never share an address, so it makes it seem like he never lived with him for any considerable period of time.
Interesting.
So I did a bit of a deep dive into the son.
Of course you did.
Because you know what? In my line of work, everybody's a suspect.
Innocent until proven guilty, suspect until exonerated. I get it.
Absolutely. So yes. I'm going to check and see if this is my scumbag. Just going to keep bringing that one back.
I love it. I love it.
The thing is, he's currently like, he's a father, he's married, seems like he's got his stuff together, which is great. Right. But around the time that Patrice went missing, he would have been 22 at the time. Right. So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, capable of anything. Because it's not like he's a child. Like, he could totally pull something off. So if he was angry enough, who knows? He got arrested a few times. I mean, he's got stuff like speeding, DUIs, driving under the influence of drugs and alcohol, reckless driving. He also twice left the scene of an accident that involved an injury.
Oh, geez.
So there's a lot there. Again, you can only read so much of the info, just like a teaser, which is really rude.
And also, you know, you can be somebody who has had those things happen. That doesn't mean that you're a killer, but
absolutely. This guy could be fine.
Sure.
It's just, I've got to look at everybody. That's,
yeah, and he's been entangled with the law is what I'm hearing.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, he lived close to where they were at the time when she went missing. At one point, he, like, not at one point, at three separate points, he had to go to court because at three different addresses, the landlord took him to court because he refused to leave. So,
interesting.
Yeah, and one of the addresses they gave there was not in the White Pages background check, so I was very upset about that. So I had to find out through a different angle, which also gave me his roommates, who I've also both looked into. They have, like, one criminal record, but it's light stuff. They're fine. I didn't find anything that connected them to Patrice or Jeremy Jones that I was trying to desperately connect people to, or of even course. The fake witness that happened earlier. He also ended up getting I don't think you get arrested for it. He got a ticket anyway, fined, I guess, for hunting without a license. And then like a couple years later, he went and got a hunting license, but it has a different birthday on it.
Why? What did he gain?
I don't know. Like, I'm starting, like, is there a way that it was somehow cheaper if you were a certain age? Like, I can't. What other reason would he have aside from getting a dumb lie out of it?
Yeah, great question. Yeah, he made himself a year younger. And for what?
Yeah. To impress some cool girls at the hunting license office.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. Yeah. Okay, so do you think what you're telling me, he's of the age, he's in his 20s, perhaps he has some anger, maybe he really wants to, like, you know, make daddy love him. Do you think he could have been involved in this?
Oh, it's more than possible.
Right.
Like, I think it had something to do with either his dad, or I don't know if he was part of it, or I really think his dad was part of it, so I don't know. I think he had somebody help him, whether it was his son or whatever. I mean, again, he is a seemingly happily married family man now, so maybe he didn't. Maybe you couldn't sleep at night if you do something like this, I would like to think. You know, I don't know. I haven't heard him speak, so as far as I know, I don't think he's as creepy as his father, but
Who knows?
I don't know. I don't know how involved in his life his father was.
Now, I also know that obviously I uncovered, the only detail I uncovered was that Rob did go to prison for a DUI. Was there other legal trouble that Rob got into that feels of note?
Yeah. I mean, he had a lot of multiple legal problems. I can't even say the most recent one, but in 2000, he had some trouble with a corporation that I have Googled for the life of me and I cannot fucking find them. So January, they sue him. It doesn't tell me why. Then February 14th of that year, so just like weeks later, case closed, we're letting it go.
Okay.
The very next day, the company sued him again. But then this time they put forward a motion for a physical or mental exam. So I don't.
Interesting.
It is. And I'm going to say, I just want a minute alone with that computer to read more into that. But of course, they don't get too into people's privacies.
But that
which is
sounds
great, but.
Well, yes. I mean, I guess that protects us all. But that does seem interesting that this company, for whatever reason, they tried to sue him once, and then they were so hellbent, they went back again asking for a physical / mental exam. That feels like, again, and listen, as I said, just because someone has done time or whatever for a small crime or a misdemeanor or whatever does not mean that means that they could kill somebody. And we are being very clear. We're not suggesting that. But it does seem interesting that this is a person who's being investigated, who's being sued, who's being investigated, and then being asked to take physical and mental exams. It just seems to, again, paint a picture of who this guy is. The other thing, too, that I know that we've talked about offline is he changed the locks. When did he change the locks? Because she went missing one day, and by the next day the locks were changed. Did he do it himself? Is there a receipt for him buying the locks? Did he call a locksmith? Yeah. If so, what's that timeline? Did he call them after she officially went missing? Or was he sloppy? Show me the credit card receipts. You know
Absolutely.
What I'm saying?
Absolutely. The whole idea of him doing the locks at all is such a huge red flag to me.
Yeah.
Because he admits to locking her child out of the house, not giving him any of his own freaking clothes. Like, he was just like, just fucking leave.
Yeah.
He locked him out. What part of that says, I think my wife is about to come home? Because if his wife came home and found out that he treated her son like that, she would divorce him and leave him. There's no way she would stick around. She would be so pissed at that. So to me, that's a huge red flag showing he truly believed she wasn't coming home.
Yeah, great point. And if there was a chance that she had just gone missing with her house keys, wouldn't it have been a rude awakening for her to come back to her own home and not be able to get in? Like, I just don't think that sounds like a typical grieving person. And again, maybe he's just an eccentric. Maybe he's a total weirdo. But in these cases, it just feels like he was involved. Don't you think?
Well, it's also weird. He, like, his half-ass reasoning was, well, something happened to her. I didn't want them to, like, come and do something to me. And it's like, okay, but the police say her keys were at the salon. So how were they going to get in? They didn't make a copy and then run the keys back.
I didn't realize that. Very interesting.
They left the keys there, so they wouldn't have been able to get in. But it's like, why would you have made it so your wife couldn't even get in her own home?
Yeah.
Unless you knew she wasn't coming back or you didn't want cops inside.
Great points. The other thing that I do have to quickly mention is in the show, he talks about, of course, how obsessed he was with Patrice. He slept with her ashes every night for a year. You know, he cradled and kissed her bones. And then they're talking to him and he literally opens this like junk cupboard closet and the box of her ashes is sitting on the floor like in a pile of tennis shoes, and it's not in a nice urn, it's in this dilapidated beat up cardboard box, which he then pulls out. And he almost had this moment when he pulled out that bag of ashes that in my opinion seemed like titillated, like he was just like, oh wow, I haven't looked at these in so long. Like, it was just like this weird moment. Mm-hmm. But the bigger point being, I get it, you're remarried and I guess maybe your wife is jealous of your dead wife's ashes. I don't know. But point being, something doesn't add up to me that this person who was so in love and obsessed with this woman to the point that he would sleep with her ashes every night is now discarding them essentially into the bottom of a junk closet covered in like duffel bags and squash rackets he's never used. You know what I mean? Like, it just, again, it just painted a picture for me that I'm like, that's not a typical reaction or action for someone who has lost a loved one.
No, I mean, that's absolutely not how you show love in any way. Like, there's no affection there. You don't stick your dead wife's ashes at the bottom of the closet where the solo cups got a higher priority in the closet than the ashes. Like,
yeah,
it's so weird to me. Just every single thing he did was weird and a massive red flag, and just how possessive he was. And he even says, I was very protective of her and I have her and that's good, and I'm keeping her ashes away, I'm not letting anybody have them, especially Pistol. And it's like,
just so sad, the son, too, that poor boy,
right? The son would care about them more than anybody else, so why not let him have them?
Well, and especially considering they're being kept thrown in the bottom of a closet, it's very sad that this man who's obviously been devastated his entire life by this loss has not gotten any justice, and he also just doesn't have, you know, a piece of his mother, which is so sad. Listen, it brings us to the point that we have to talk about what our final conclusions are, what our final theories are. Here's where I'm coming from, and then you tell me, because you have more information than me. I think Rob was involved. I think it was not a single person job. Mm-hmm. I think whether it was Jeremy Jones or not, the serial killer, mm-hmm. I think he had to have somebody else, possibly more than one person involved. I think it's more than possible when Patrice was on the phone and she seemed irritated, either Rob was there in person and she was freaking out, or a stranger was there in person and she was freaking out. I think that she could have been either killed. I guess they didn't seem to see that any proof that she had been killed in the salon. There was no proof of that, so no. But I think she could have been drugged. I think that she could have been put into a trunk of a car, perhaps Rob's car, and could have allowed him to continue his timeline. He could have gone and got his gas or whatever. He could have got to work on time. He could have gotten her home, get her in the house, change the locks, And then God knows, he does make a reference in the episode that he's like, who knows, someone who took her could have kept her and used her as their toy, which also felt like, I was like, that's just not a way that especially a man would speak traditionally about their wife's final days. You know, I don't think most men would want to think about their wife being, quote, used as a stranger's toy. So at the end of the day, I know that my theory does not really say a lot, but again, there's so much information that is all leading to dead ends. And I think at the end of the day, he's involved, but he certainly didn't do it alone. What about you?
Look, I think your theory is amazing because same. I truly believe he's got to be part of it. He has to be.
He's got to be.
I fully agree. I think she was, whether he had help or something, she was drugged, put into a car, whether somebody did that for him, took her somewhere else, and then he met up later, brought her to the house. He changed the locks because he didn't want anybody in.
Right.
That comment you made about him saying that he doesn't know, maybe somebody used her as a toy, and then like later in the episode reference to using her as a teddy bear. Like,
great point.
Come on.
Great point.
That's so fucking creepy.
Yeah.
And I get that. I mean, he could be the nicest guy in the world and maybe the show made him look a certain way, but they didn't make him say, I carried her bones around. Like, and it was the last time I saw her anywhere near intact. And like, all of it, like, I fully believe he has to be some part of it. The cops admitted they have not ruled him out officially.
Yeah.
But they just need something to, you know, push it more towards. They just need that piece of evidence. And I find it insane that he's so clever enough that he isn't getting caught. And that's killing me. And I really, I do not want years from now him to die and for them to be going through his stuff and find that ring and find out he's had it all along.
Right.
That's would piss me off. I want him in jail. I want justice served.
Of course.
I want us to get our scumbag.
On that note, listen, this has been a joy. Christy, your level of research is truly stunning. And I think that it's been amazing that you've done the work, you've shared it with the people, and I thank you, and I know that they thank you for it.
I'm just honored that it's being acknowledged.
Listen, I'm having such a grand time. There's nothing that I love more than discussing these things with you. And the fact that other people have responded and like listening to it is the real gift. We hope you enjoyed this episode. It has been a ball and a delight for us to do together. I hope you join us next week. Next week, we're going to talk about the House of Terror episode, which is the episode, of course, about the French, not royalty, but what would we call him?
He was a count.
He was a count. Okay, great. Yeah. The French count who seemingly killed his entire family, buried them in the backyard, and then disappeared, ostensibly. So we're going to get into that one. We're going to get into some more cocktails. We're going to talk about the details of the episode, and we're going to have a laugh doing it. So thank you again for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of True Crime and Cocktails Unsolved Mysteries Edition. We hope you enjoyed it. If you have a theory about this case, email us, theories@truecrimeandcocktails.com. We're going to read our favorite theories in an upcoming episode, so stay tuned for that. Also, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at True Crime and Cocktails and on Twitter at Not Detectives. Visit Christy on Twitter and Instagram at Unsolved Christy and me on Instagram at Lauren Elizabeth Ash. You can also find me on Twitter at Lauren_Ash. And man, that was a lot of handles. But listen, we want to connect with you. Make sure to like, share, comment, all the good stuff. If you enjoyed the episode, please give us a nice rating. It actually is a big deal and can really help us out. And also make sure you join us next week for another True Crime Slumber Party when we discuss the Netflix Unsolved Mysteries episode, House of Terror. Bye.